Hi, good afternoon. This is Amira Adawi, your host of Beauty and Wellness Talk. Beauty and Wellness Talk, it's a weekly radio show and podcast that is focused on raising awareness on the issue of colorism, skin lighting practices, and promoting health and wellness in our communities. We have different guests every week. Today's guest is Safiya Mohammed, who used to be part of our Young Women's Wellness and Leadership Initiative. And Safiya recently graduated from high school, and she's studying at the University of St. Thomas this coming fall, and she will be studying journalism. So welcome, Safiya.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So, Safiya, I'm so happy that you are joining me today, and we will discuss so many different things, and I'm so glad to have this discussion with you. So can you introduce yourself? Can you share your background, who you are, like, and like what you do, what you were doing? I know you were in high school, and you did really amazing being part of the Young Women's Wellness and Leadership Initiative. I always used to like your energy when you come to sessions, your energy, how much passion you share advocating for issues that impact people, such as female genital mutilation and things like that. So so just tell us who you are, and yeah, welcome.
Yeah, so as you mentioned before, my name is Safiya Mohammed, and I am a recent high school graduate. I graduated from Central High School, and I will be studying journalism and at the University of St. Thomas in the fall. But I started my entry into the field of journalism right after my freshman year of high school when I joined 360, which is a youth newspaper group at the University of St. Thomas. And it really opened my eyes to the world of storytelling, and I became much more passionate about it through there. And since then, I've been a part of the group, and I've also ventured off into various other, outlets and other places where I can express myself through my writing. And now with the virus and, everyone in quarantine, I'm currently writing for Odyssey, which is a online magazine for young people, millennials and Gen Zers, and it's like an outlet for us to express ourselves, and that's really been, I've been occupied by that recently for most of the summer.
Yeah, that's really amazing, and that actually is a segue to our discussion. Like yesterday, you published a really amazing article that talked about, Black Lives Matter means to you, how you have experienced here living in Minnesota and the whole Minnesota niceness, So, yeah. So could you say a little bit more about your article?
So I wrote an article about, the stealthy racism of Minnesota nice. So for those who don't know, Minnesota nice is a term to describe like the culture of Minnesota and how everyone's all happy and smiley and, just welcoming on a surface level. But beneath that layer, a lot of people are passive aggressive, or, they have beliefs or things that they don't want to say to you up front, but, they'll probably talk about it behind your back. And that correlates to racism, and how a lot, not all, but a lot of white Minnesotans will think that being nice up front will be enough to dissolve racism. And my article dissects that, and it debunks that idea that kindness will be able to eradicate prejudice or discrimination.
Mm-hmm. If anything, sometimes it promotes,
Yes, that does.
Because the thing is, they want to be nice, being nice and not addressing and creating equitable environment, it's not a nice, actually.
Yeah.
It's the opposite,
Yeah, it's like you don't want to address the elephant in the room. You don't want to have the hard conversation, but if you don't have it, then we're never going to move forward.
True, and that's that will be really interesting to watch moving forward. If people really learned anything about the events that had happened in May, what happened to George Floyd and all of the, you know, civic unrest and racial issues that happened, if that is a lesson, you know, for Minnesotans and in general Minnesotanites. So to you, in all the events that happened in May, what do you think, like, especially the racial, you know, like events that happened, what do you think, and how will that shape, you know, moving forward in the world that we live in?
Yeah, so when I first heard of George Floyd's story and, you know, seeing the video that was going around on social media, I genuinely, you know, I couldn't even watch the entire thing because it's just that heartbreaking.
Same. And it
hit me in a place that I never knew that it could, and it affected me. Like, I was super depressed. I'm not kidding. I was just so angry and heartbroken, and I had all these emotions. You know, it was hard for me to keep up with it because, you know, as a Black person in Minnesota, mm-hmm. I know that these things happen a lot but don't get picked up by the media as much as they should be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I started, you know, paying attention to a lot more of the coverage of his death and the protests, I began to realize, or I saw that, you know, a lot of white people, not only in Minnesota, but in the entire country, are, you know, just beginning to realize just how bad it is for some of us. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed that a lot of, you know, a lot of journalists also are changing the tune of how they cover police brutality and how they cover Black deaths. And, you know, it's good to see the positive change that's coming out of it all, but mm-hmm. I'm a little worried that it's going to be short-lived. I hope it's not. I hope it becomes a movement and not just a moment that's happening.
Yeah, I hope the same, that should be a lesson learned, not only lesson learned, but also influence action, you know, lasting, actionable things that needs to happen, whether it's changing the system, or whether it's helping to change people's behaviors in terms of racial biases and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I hope that it really shifts the way we think and how we treat others.
Right, yep. And yeah. I also know, going back to the journalists and how they're covering it, I just wanted to note that most American journalist, they write in a form called AP style. And yes. One specific change, yes, you know about it. So one specific change that AP style added was that they, I believe they use Black as now a cultural term, and, you know, they add just more definition to it when they're writing a story about Black Americans. And, you know, just seeing that journalism, which is a white dominated industry, like, make those slow steps is also, you know, it's given me hope, and it's really motivated me to want to be a part of it.
Yeah, that's really amazing that, you know, it's shifting that. It's also like, you know, like the second part also that I want to talk to you in a minute is that it's also influencing, you know, like I've been working on almost 10 years to address chemical exposure as it relates to skin lighting and all of that and colorism. And now, like, with the whole Black Lives Matter movements, thanks to them for, like, amplifying, you know, the work that we do, like, some cosmetic companies are having that discussion of racial discussion, you know, like, of potentially how they will address their colorism, you know, products that they create that they promote people to look lighter skin, like, some of them, they call like fair and lovely, meaning that if you're light, you're lovely, you know?
Yep.
So there's that, you know, global discussion now. So thanks to Black Lives Matter for really amplifying a lot of racial things that people used to ignore. So I'm glad to see that in the journalism world that they're taking note and changing some of these things. So Sophia, you know, like it also impacted a lot of young people, especially a lot of young immigrants, African immigrants, young Somalis, who did not have, like, their parents did not have this whole African American experience, like experience of slavery and all of that, and understanding of the history. And so a lot of times, yes, they know they're Africans, but they don't have the historical background of real being here in America, where their kids is totally different, you know, like they identify themselves as African American. And so what do you think, you know, like how did that impacted your identity, and how do you define your identity, and how does that also impact your Blackness?
Well, I've always known that I was Black. Like, mm-hmm. even as a kid, I always knew that I was a Black person.
Amazing.
As I got older, I began to realize that there's more to my Blackness than just appearing as a person of color. There's also, you know, the history that Black people have, you know, experienced and what they've been put through in this country. And, you know, now that I am a teenager, I'm entering adulthood, I'll be 18 soon. Because now that I'm at this place in my life and seeing all the events as a Black person, it's helped me, you know, become more like secure in my Blackness. And it's helped me realize that, you know, even though we may experience discrimination and we may experience racism, we're in this together as a collective. Mm-hmm. And what impacts African Americans also impacts me as an African person here in America.
Absolutely, because we're not Black at the end of the day, yeah.
Yep. And you mentioned African parents who probably don't know anything about the African experience. My mom always told me that, you know, I was a Black person, but like me, she never really thought anything beyond that. Mm-hmm. But now that she saw George Floyd's death, she, you know, she also began to realize, you know, maybe like, you know, I am a part of that too. And she also began to notice that, you know, my brothers are Black boys, and they are also, it's possible that they might experience, you know, these run-ins with the police as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's just something that she had never thought about before, but with all the events that are unfolding, it's now crossed her mind. And I think that a lot of African parents, a lot of Somali parents specifically, are now having those thoughts and having those conversations with their sons, mm-hmm. and daughters.
Which is so important, you know, to have these conversations. So, like, as those who lack these awarenesses, like these historical awarenesses, whether it's like the slavery of like what happened to our country, or country of origin in Somalia, or even here, the history of slavery, like how can we teach the parents, like how can we educate the parents so they make sure that they teach their young kids early on and find ways to protect them?
I think, what I did with my mother was I showed her the video of George Floyd's death, and it was, you know, very graphic, and that really moved her. Mm-hmm. I, you know, that worked for my mom. That's not going to work for everyone. It might trigger some people, so it's good to be aware of that. But a much more milder but also impactful way of bringing awareness to African immigrant parents is, you know, maybe just starting this conversation, teaching them the history. You know, we took history classes in, you know, during school and during college about you know, American history, and we learned how Black people were treated. You know, our parents never really had those lessons. So I think it's our job to teach them the history of racism and slavery and Jim Crow and all of it in, that's happened in this country. And, you know, I think those are good steps to take first. Mm-hmm. But in all honesty, as far as like a direct step-by-step plan, I'm not entirely sure, but I think just starting the conversation for now.
That's really amazing too. So going back to the Black Lives Matter, how are you taking part of that movement now? I know you're writing a lot around that. You did really amazing article yesterday. So what are you doing to take part of that movement?
I've been writing, like you said. I wanted to go to the protest, but there's also like, you know, health concerns.
Yeah.
I personally think that my writing is an outlet. It's, you know, a way for me to express myself and also a way for me to be a voice for Black people and for Africans and, you know, just everyone who hasn't traditionally had a voice or a place in media. Mm-hmm. And through my writing, I am trying to bring awareness to what's going on. I'm also trying to put in a Black perspective in, you know, the industry of writing that is, again, very white dominated. Mm-hmm. So I want to use my journalism and my platform at Odyssey to further extend the Black Lives Matter conversation and to also give the perspective of a Black person that lives in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. Which is very important because, like, you know, like taking action and doing, being part of the movement, it doesn't have to be you going on like the streets and all of that. Mm-hmm. But you can contribute in so many ways, whether, mm-hmm. you know, like donating to these causes or, mm-hmm. You know, like doing the writing that you do, which even the writing is very powerful, you know. So these are how people will read and learn, you know. So mm-hmm. so it's really great that you're taking part of in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I also want to commend the people who did go and protest during, you know, this past month and with everything that's been unfolding. I know that some Black people, myself included, just like what's been happening has been really heavy on my heart. So I didn't have it in me to go out and demonstrate, but I know that a lot of young Black people did, and they were brave enough to come together and to say, this is not okay, Black Lives Matter. And I think, you know, that itself is also very powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, very powerful. Yeah. And you know, like, we're all different. So we all have different talents that we can mm-hmm. all contribute to. So I'm glad that you're using your writing talent to contribute to that, which is really amazing. So I want now to discuss with you about the colorism issue, you know, that is a deeply rooted issue of like that has a lot of historical background. So what do you think, how does colorism impact you?
Well, what I specifically remember as a child was that, you know, I've always been a darker skinned person,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, my extended family made an effort to always point that out. They'd yes. be like, oh, you know, you know how they are. They, you know, I don't know why, but whenever they'd see me, I feel like that's the first thing they'd always notice about me.
Yeah.
So they made it, you know, very apparent and very obvious, and that ruined my self-esteem. And I know a lot of other, you know, darker skinned Somali people, my family and friends, and, you know, we've talked about this and they've had those similar experiences.
Mm-hmm.
But as I got older and as I, you know, began to discover my own identity, I became more secure in my skin tone. And also, I'd say that social media has helped in that because, you know, there are now ads and, you know, models, Instagram accounts, various forms of, you know, advertisement that show darker skinned women in a positive light, in a in, you know, they're displayed as beautiful and as gracious. And it's, you know, it's really helped me become more secure in my skin tone.
Yeah, and also seeing representation of people that look like you in public place. Yeah, like you said, in Instagram, seeing that. And Sophia, I agree with you. Like all of us in the Somali community who are darker shades, have experienced that. You know.
Yeah. We just can't catch a break for some reason. Yes. We really can't.
Yeah. It's like talking about your skin color all the time. No other thing.
Every time. Or yeah. Like now if I'll FaceTime, even in Somalia, if I'll FaceTime like my aunts there, or my, you know, my grandma, and they'll see me and they're like, oh, you know, I think that you would be lighter if, you know, like, you're not in a hot climate. So that's like the first thing that they'll say to me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And that's, have you ever had anyone that encouraged you to use skin lighting products?
No, actually, but I know people who have, and I've seen the effects of it. And that actually is what made me, even as a kid, I was like, no, this isn't for me.
Yeah, you're right. So how does this impact also your, you know, your friends? And you mentioned that, you know, like you discuss about this and all of that. So how does it also impact your friends? Because some people might not have, you know, like the strength and the support system to react. These individuals that, you know, like do all of this, like do all of this talking. So how is this colorism impacting your friends, and how are they coping to actually address that?
I have a couple of friends who I would say maybe aren't as confident in their darker skin as I would like them to be, or as I would hope them to be. And I think, you know, I try to affirm them. I try to, you know, tell them that, you know, your skin is beautiful. You don't have to worry about what everyone else is saying. You don't have to look another way in order to be beautiful. Your skin is fine just the way it is. And I, you know, I try to be that positive voice. If they're not getting it from their parents or from their family, I hope that at least me telling them will be able to uplift them and to make them, you know, to change how they view themselves and to be more confident who they are. And I mentioned that I knew a couple of people who use skin lighting products. Most of them are actually like distant relatives, and you know, I've tried to, you know, have a conversation with them once or twice to tell them this, you know, this isn't good for you. It's, you're going to have long-term effects on your skin, and it's going to be very detrimental to your health. But, you know, it's, for them, it's take it or leave it. So I try to be that warning for them as well.
Yeah, actually, that's a really great segue to my follow the other question that I wanted to ask you. As you know, it's highly prevalent, the skin lighting practice in the Somali community and other communities of color. And especially in the Somali community, it's so obvious, you know, like you said, everybody talks about our darker skin, you know, as like we're all totally different. So how do you see that it's impacting them, both the older and the younger generation? And what are some of the things that we can collectively do to really support them and address this issue, especially in the young generation?
I think for the older generation, this is going to sound kind of harsh, but they're kind of set in their ways. And at this point, I don't think they're going to listen to someone my age, especially if they've made this a habit. So there's also that element of you can't really tell your elders what to do, because then they're going to take it as, oh, who's this young person who thinks that they're better than me? Mm-hmm. So I personally just leave it at that. But for younger people, mm-hmm. Like I said, I've had friends who I've tried to make them feel better about their dark skin and their skin tone. And I think for younger girls, if they see representation, if they see darker skinned women in movie roles, in the modeling industry, and all across all boards, then they're hopefully going to be more confident in who they are, and they're not going to have the insecurities that a lot of us grew up with.
Mm-hmm. True. Yeah. And that's, part of it. Why, we thought about earlier, like, I've been working on this issue close to 10 years. And one of the things that, I also have, interviewed people, young people in this high school that you used to go, and all of that. The thing is, like, that's what the young people ask: safe space, to be in safe space, to see representation. And that is why intentionally we created the Young Women's Wellness and Leadership Initiative, which you were part of it, to really even intentionally invite women of color who are in leadership positions. So these young girls see representation, and so they connect to. So you're right. It's really important to see that representation in so many ways, in every field. Like now, Sophia, you're going into journalism. Very few Somali women are in journalism. I think you're the second person that I am seeing in Minnesota who's writing and who wants to become a journalist.
There are a couple of Somali women that I've been following who are outside of Minnesota that are in mm-hmm. journalism and in media, but again, it's like you said, it's very, very few.
Representation is such an important thing. So the other thing that I want to ask you in a broader concept, what are some of the things that we can do to end colorism, whether it's, all communities of color? This is like deeply rooted in our culture. It's like, look at now, every Somali older generation will ask you, why are you dark? Why do you look like this? So mm-hmm. it's like deeply rooted in our culture. Mm-hmm. And it's a colorism. It's something that came from, the colonization is, but nobody actually decolonized their minds. And so it becomes mm-hmm. generations. And so how do we actually end colorism in our communities?
Representation is one. We've talked about it.
Yeah.
That's one way, seeing yourself in all fields and all walks of life.
Mm-hmm.
I would also say, educating young people in schools and outside of schools. And it's our job as, an older generation to teach young people that this is wrong, this is bad for your health, your skin is beautiful the way it is, just leave all this, leave it be.
Mm-hmm.
And I would also say that we have to hold the skin lighting companies accountable on on a micro level, macro level. We just have to fight those systems and let them know that we're not gonna buy your products, we're not gonna let you manipulate us and brainwash us into thinking that our skin is bad and that we have to, as consumers, we have to buy your things in order to look better and in order to feel better about yourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So holding those companies accountable and making sure that they can't gaslight people in that way anymore.
Absolutely. I mean, they're making money off of colorism and actually making people get sick because these products have mercury, hydroquinone, and other toxic chemicals.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't it illegal to put mercury in, you know, lotions and skin products?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. But they're finding ways to do that still and import. That's some of the work that we're now doing, federal advocacy to make sure that FDA regulates these products, because they're still importing, you know, people are still importing to the U.S. Those manufacturers still, you know, like using, there are some countries in the world that haven't banned mercury itself too. So that's the thing. The other thing, Sophia, they don't actually write on the label that it has mercury. So all of the products we tested never showed mercury as an ingredient on the label, but it contained high levels of, mercury. So they're doing all of these hidden ingredient things. And then, you know, like, and that's the other thing, Beautywell, we do a lot of health literacy for our community so people understand what are these chemicals, how can they read the label, and all of that. And then also this is so much embedded in our culture. So the demand is high. So I agree with you. We have to continuously focus on a macro level and also scale that to, you know, like to even globally, to make sure that we address all of these multiple manufacturers that are making these products and making off of, you know, like money out of these communities who are vulnerable already, who have experienced years and years colorism.
Definitely.
Yeah. So it's a multi, you know, multi approach.
Yeah, it's
an issue.
It's not a one size fits all solution to this. It's, you know, like you said, it's tradition, it's money, it's, you know, it's legal issues, it's all of it. And, you know, there's multiple ways to attack it head on, but also I think there are subtle ways to eradicate the problem. And, you know, it starts with us, and it's the change that we can do that I think can leave a better impact than, I guess, just one person trying to take it all on together.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's why, you know, young people like yourself, Sophia, taking part of this can make a huge difference too, because the thing is, we have to prevent the young people before they get to our older generation mindset even thinking if you are black, something is wrong with you, when we all of us are black, you know.
It doesn't, like, even if you're a light skin, you're still a black person. So you're never going to be able to get rid of that part of you.
Yeah. So Sophia, can you talk about a little bit about that? Because I have had conversation about some Somalis that say, well, so-and-so is light skinned, but no, that person is still a black, you know? Can you say a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So it's not only how you present, it's not only how other people perceive you, it's also like history and lineage. And I think it's so, in Somali it's called abtiris. it's your history, and, you know, all that is something that, you know, you've taken from your parents. It's something that, you know, it's inherent, it's heredity, it's, you know, it's within you. So you can't really say just because this person is light-skinned they're not black. That's not the only way to determine blackness. It's also your history and your lineage and so many other things.
I mean, your whole identity, you know, like so that's the thing, that a lot of times our people also have identity crisis, even if they're older generation. Remember what I said, like, they have never fully decolonized their mind, and so so it's like generational thing that some people, like, if they have lighter skin shade, you know, compared to other Somalis, they think that they're not fully African or fully black, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, that has been a lot of debate, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I think if people's minds were able to be colonized the first time, then they're also capable of being decolonized. You know, it started somewhere, and it's very much possible to end it somewhere. And I think this generation, we're saying enough is enough, and it stops with us.
Yes. Yes, mm-hmm. I agree with you, Sophia. It has to get interrupted, you know, mm-hmm. and it has to stop, you know, with this generation. And so moving forward, generations to come, so they don't have to deal with that like deeply rooted colorism.
Yep.
Yeah. So thank you, Sophia. So what advice do you have for young people? You're such a, you're very young, but you have accomplished a lot. You have amazing future ahead of you. There's so much that, you know, those who are younger than you can learn from you. So what advice do you have for them?
I would say try to find all the opportunities that you can. Try to, you know, I went out of my way to try to find, you know, what I could do to further myself and to really be grounded and ready in my journalism work when I entered college. That was the mindset that I had all of high school. So I joined 360, the newspaper organization. I did freelance work. I tried to really center myself in my career and be prepared. And I think a lot of young people try to experiment with different things to see what they like, to see what really works with them and what they can further themselves. And then that'll really truly help when they get older. They'll have all that experience to carry and all of what they've accomplished, you know, if you've experimented with so many things, then you'll have all this experience and all, you know, you'll have things to accomplish to look back on and to fall back on if you experience any of those setbacks. And I would also say, always remember that you're not only doing this for yourself, you're doing this for younger people. You know, whether you like it or not, people are going to be looking up to you. Maybe mm-hmm. you don't know who they are, maybe you do. So, you know, you have to be conscious of, you know, who's watching you, who's seeing you, who's really observing and taking notes on what you're doing. So remember that as well.
That's a great advice, Sophia, because you're right. In all of the work that we do, in all of the causes that we engage, you're right. It has to be bigger than yourself, you know, mm-hmm. and people are watching you. Absolutely, you're right. You are a role model, you know, to so many people. And so so people are watching, you know. Yeah. So that's really great advice. Thank you so much, Sophia, for joining me today. It was really great having you. I wish you all the best with your journalism journey. And good luck with St. Thomas University. I'm sure you will do really well.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me on, for all your kind words as well.